two chairs here. Put your legs together. It makes me so mad.
Hello, I'm John O'Hara, your host for the podcast Ticket A42, which is produced by Matt Edwards for AussieTheatre.com. Each month I sit down with someone fun and exciting from the Australian showbiz canon, I guess, to talk about their life, their work and everything in between. And of course they take the Ticket A42 test. Look, it has been a few months since I've done one. I was just so burnt out and busy post Wicked and my one-man show Dedications that I really needed to take a break. I'm glad I took it because I feel much better and very recharged. But thank you for everyone that sent tweets and messages inquiring about where the podcast had gone. It's gone nowhere. We were just taking a little break. Hey, look, this month is an exciting one because I managed to grab a huge cabaret personality, Gillian Cosgrove. If you have never seen one of her shows, get along. She tours all over the country all the time. I saw her at the Ballarat Cabaret Festival, where I was also performing, and I managed to grab her in my hotel room over a glass of wine late one evening after our shows for a little chat. She's a great girl. She's very talented. And she gives a great insight into her process in writing her own shows. We also performed together just recently in Watch This's production of the Stephen Sondheim musical Company. So we've become quite good mates over the last few months, and I can't wait for you guys to meet her. She's awesome. As usual, everything we speak about on the podcast can be found on the AussieTheatre.com website on the information page. If anything we mention interests you, Matt does a great job with the information page. So visit the website AussieTheatre.com.au/ticket A42. See you on the next interview, guys. Gillian Cosgrove, who's here doing her one-woman show, Whelmed. Hi, Gillian.
Hello, John O'Hara. I'm very famous.
Yeah, and you're a personality. I think that's a fair call. So, hey, how did your show go tonight?
It was very good. Yeah. I think it was fun. I have a bit in the show where I usually try and spot a bald man and pick on him, and tonight my eyesight's not very good. And so I picked on this bald man, and then I looked and it was my Uncle John, very conservative, and I didn't know he was coming. So that was a bit stressful, but otherwise great.
Oh. Hey, well, why don't you tell me a little bit about Whelmed? Like what, because it's not the first time you've done the show, and tell me a little bit about Whelmed for people that haven't seen it.
Sure. Whelmed is, so it's all, what I do is original songs and stand-up. So Whelmed is sort of the most stand-up comedy show that I've done, which is fun and terrifying. And it's sort of about, when I first name, you always have to name a show for a festival months before you even begin to think about writing it. So that's always fun. So I'm always like, I'll just name it something that's sounds good and could be about anything that I choose. So I actually named it because of that line in 10 Things I Hate About You, where she goes, I know you can be overwhelmed and I know you can be underwhelmed, but can you ever just be whelmed? And her friend says, I think you can in Europe. And then I started to write the show and I found out that actually is a real word. And it's a sailing term. So basically when the waves were coming up the sides of the ship to the top, to the gunwales, then The ship is whelmed by the sea, right? So we're talking like 98% capacity, not catastrophic, but a bit stressful. And if the waves are coming over the top, the ship's overwhelmed, underwhelmed, totally not a real word, totally an in-joke for sailors when a ship's on the land.
Oh, wow, never knew that.
Yeah. Mm. So it's sort of a show about, you know, living your life at 98% and why we do that. And it's about anxiety and there's stuff about lizards and juice detoxes and just running the gamut, really. It's got a bit of everything.
And how have, so you've done your first show in Ballarat tonight.
Second.
So how's Ballarat taken to you?
Look, it's been a whirlwind two-night season. it's been really great. I got to host the gala the other night, which was...
You did a great job.
Thank you. You're very kind. I got trapped in my dress afterwards when I got changed. That was an exciting adventure.
And exfoliated.
Yeah, I did exfoliate. Yep. Always exfoliate with an inside-out sequin dress. Yeah, it's been great. It's been super fun.
Yeah. And so what's next in terms of the shows? Like, are you writing another show?
I am. Yes, technically I am writing it.
Sure.
I'm about to go on a holiday, which is so exciting.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I get back, I go to the Brisbane Powerhouse for a week of development on a project I'm doing with them. Mm-hmm. And then I come back and then I go straight into rehearsal for Jerry's Girls with the production company.
You do. Now, we're going to talk about Jerry's Girls a little bit later. You went off book. No. But yeah, that's bloody exciting.
Yeah, and then I have then I have December, January to write a whole new show to start on the festival circuit in February. So yeah. That's heaps of time. I'm not worried.
Is it a show a year for you?
It has been, sort of. Year and a half.
Yeah.
I like it. I sort of like being able to plan out at least the first half of my year. Yeah, and I love doing the show, and I do like writing the show for most of the writing.
Yeah.
It's just the bit, it's like the dark night of the soul bit, where it's like, why did I begin this? Why did I think I could do this every time?
Oh, well, they're always good. I've seen you do three now, so.
Have you?
Yeah. I saw Things I Can't Do.
Waitressing?
We'll
have long, convoluted titles.
I haven't seen Whelmed. Oh, no, I've seen two, and I've seen another one.
You've seen This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things.
Yeah.
And Waitressing.
Yeah.
Things
I Do Well.
Yeah.
So you are one of those people who I put in the category with, and it's just my opinion, so maybe it's not everyone's. I put in the same category, not completely, but like you kind of fit in that niche with like Eddie Perfect and Tim Minchin and Ali McGregor, in that you create your own work and therefore your own work opportunities, because ultimately you're so clever. So it's a compliment.
And no one else can give me a job.
But I'm not the first to draw the comparison. So like and you kind of brought it up in your song at the gala, which I thought was interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to, how do you feel about those comparisons?
I mean, it's good in a way. Like if you had to ask me what kind of career I want, those are the people that I would list because I always wanted to do work that was sort of varied and interesting and, you know, doing a bit of everything. A delicious tapas of a career. Always thinking about tapas.
Yeah.
I mean, there are certainly terrifying comparisons. The other thing, though, is that the Tim Minchin comparison is just generally an easy way for me to explain sort of what I do to people who don't know.
Oh, so you started the comparison.
No, I didn't. David Campbell started this. I did not start this. He wears more eyeliner than me and no shoes. Mm. And I wear shoes that I'm not very good at walking in for comedic effect. It is what it is. I don't feel like I'm on that level. I would love to be there one day.
Well, I think you are, but you know, that's nice that you don't, because that's because that would be up yourself. Yeah. and you've just finished doing Company with me. We've spent a lot of time together in the last few months.
You've been very close to each other, both physically and emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when you know, like, do you have a favorite, like, kind of working on your own or like working on a kind of scripted, directed piece with a team?
I sort of like doing both. I haven't done that many actual musicals, you know. I did Pirates of Penzance a couple of years ago with the production company, which was really fun. And then earlier this year, I got to do Loving Repeating, which was fantastic, with Vic Theatre Company. And it was especially when I was doing that and I was kind of rewriting Whelmed, because the day after we closed Loving Repeating, I opened in Perth with the new show. And it was great because I loved that cast, I loved that show, and I loved doing that work. But it also made me really excited to go back to my work.
Yeah.
And so it was great to do Company, knowing that then I was going back to doing me shows, because it's so nice to work with other people when you work by yourself so much of the time. And it's nice for someone to go, these are the lines you have to say, these are the song, these are the notes you have to sing. But then when I'm doing it, I enjoy it, and especially, you know, on those two shows, it's been such great people and such a great time and great writing and all of that. But I also, a little piece of me hates that if something goes wrong, I can't comment on it. I have to keep going, you know, whereas in my show, if someone has a weird laugh, I can be like, check out this guy, you know, but in a musical, I can't do that. And I'm like, we all just have to put up with this. No one's talking about the weird laugh guy. Come on, everybody.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. I like both.
Yeah.
And so in writing, because I have found that in writing Dedications, my show, I just was really, well, it's over now. I've done all the shows I'll do for 2015, but I have talked about it a lot on this podcast. The discipline of writing it, like of sitting down and writing it, was probably the hardest part for me. So I want to ask you about like the process, because you write so much and so kind of often now. Like, what's your process when you kind of think of a new show?
What I've done for the last few years, which I haven't done this time around, which is terrifying, after I wrote my first show, which was straight out of uni, which I had several months to kind of write, I was very lucky to have a producer on that show, and I had people that helped me, which was fantastic. And then they were kind of like, great, we're not a production company anymore. It's all very amiable. This is a boring backstory. Anyway, then I kind of had to do everything for myself, and I knew that I wanted to make work, but I also knew that I wasn't very disciplined and I didn't really know kind of how to go about it. And I started this project that I called 8 Songs in 8 Weeks, where I had to write a song every week for 8 weeks. And on the Sunday night at midnight, I had to post a photo of the lyrics of the song on the internet, because public accountability is my only motivator. Sure. It's a horrifying thing to realize about yourself, that you only work when people are watching you. I know this because when I'm in a yoga class and they're like, really work your abs, I don't do it unless the teacher comes near me. Just the worst. Anyway, so I did that. I did the first round of that, and that was fantastic. And that was kind of without any motive for those songs to be in a show. Mm. And then about 6 months later, I did another one. And so the songs from those first two 8 Songs in 8 Weeks kind of volumes were the basis of This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things. So it meant I had sort of 16 songs that I could choose from and then choose write stand-up material to fit in around that. And they both worked really well, you know, sort of by about week 3 or 4. Even I'm thinking of things all the time. It's just sort of like exercising your brain, even though the things I'm thinking of are not all very good.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of things, which is great. But then the third time that I did it, I knew that I was like, okay, you have 8 weeks to write these 8 songs. That will probably be the basis of your next show, which is happening 8 weeks after that. So that was much harder to write, sort of knowing it. And I had to keep putting it out of my mind and just write stuff. So that's really helpful, because I would not ordinarily write 8 songs in a year.
Yeah.
I really wouldn't. So that's been really good.
And do you write the melody or the lyric first?
I usually have an idea first.
Yeah.
So I sort of... I write a lot of lists. That's the thing that's really helpful for me, to work from lists. I never write a melody. Once I had a student who wanted to talk to me about like writing songs, and he went, you know when you're writing a melody? And I was like, no, I don't. So I would generally have sort of a chord progression that I like and a lyrical idea in mind. And then I would just kind of sit down and just sing over the top of that and record it and kind of just... sort of, I mean, I'm an improviser as well. I work with, you know, different improv groups. So the ideal situation is that I drink half a bottle of wine and then I sit down and I just kind of play the chord stuff that I like and I sing over the top of it with what I think will work. And then I will listen back to that and I'll sort of go back through that and then I'll start to find rhymes and jokes and punchlines that fit in with the theme of that sort of structure-wise. And that's also sort of how I work for writing. I'm not very good at sitting down and physically writing or typing kind of dialogue. So the way I've worked in the past, which will be different for this new show, I guess, is that I've kind of gone, okay, these are sort of the 6 or 8 songs that I have. This is roughly the order they'll go in. These are sort of dot points of what I think I'll talk about in between. And then I film on my laptop and record on my phone. I just play the songs and then I get up and I go, great, do you know what's weird about that? But this is a weird thing. And I just kind of talk and faff around, and then, again, half a bottle of wine, ideal. Do the next song, talk about the next thing, kind of ramble through, find things as I go, and then I'll watch that back, and I'll kind of go, great, that was great, you're an idiot, this bit is good, how embarrassing. And then start to write, actually type things from there and piece it together. And I'll do that several times over.
Yeah.
And then, you know, leading up to the show, I'll do that for friends of mine. You know, I have sort of 2 or 3 people that I'll... just kind of show it to and go, does this work? Does this not work? I know that I was kidding myself here. Thank you for calling me on it. It's not super disciplined, but it's works for me thus far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like from a distance, it's pretty disciplined.
I'm glad that some people.
It really does. Yeah, no, it does. The half a bottle of wine is.
That is
integral.
Really the essential ingredient.
We're drinking wine tonight, which is exciting. Yeah.
I was also eating soy crisps, but it was very loud for the microphone.
That's okay. It's relaxed. I always wonder this. Like, someone that can play as well as you can play and then sing as well as you can sing, like, what if you could only do one? Like, what would you pick? Can you pick? Not in a sad way. Like, not in a, like, I'm going to cut your throat out and so therefore you can't sing.
It
but, like... But yeah, would you pick one over the other?
Oh no, I don't think I could.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I could. I mean, I've been playing since I was very, very little.
Mm.
But I really like singing.
Sure. It's one in the same.
Yeah, kind of.
Hey, so tell us a little bit about your. See, I'm. You don't even know, but I'm plugging you. Like, what? Tell us a little bit about your live album recordings that you did at the Toff.
Yeah. So I. This is so nice. Thank you. I haven't even gotten organized with this. I recorded my last two shows. So I did this kind of live recording show at the Toff in town in Melbourne, where I did This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things and Julian Cosgrove Is Whelmed. Kind of in their entirety with a 20-minute break in between. And my voice totally held out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stamina.
Were you medicated?
Heavily medicated. As far as I'm concerned, a gin and tonic is a vocal warm-up.
Sure.
You can hear how husky I am. Don't take this advice. It was great. Yeah, I kind of was just like, I was lucky enough to go on this kind of big regional tour earlier this year at the Comedy Festival with a bunch of other comedians, which was terrifying but great, and I never really thought that much about merch. I have a CD from my first show that
merch is like showbiz talk for merchandise.
Le merchandise. Yeah, so I have that CD, and it wasn't until I went on this tour that I was like, oh, people will buy this after they see, and they will, like, I sell it sometimes, but I always forget. My dad always gets mad at me, and so it was kind of like, oh, you can live off of this. And my I don't know if you know Die Rottenpunkte, who are like a... Do you know them?
No.
They're great. They're like a...
I thought you just made that up.
Yeah. Perhaps you've heard of... Die Rottenpunkte are real. They're a comedy and musical duo. Brother, sister. Fantastic. And I was on tour with them. And they told me that when they go to Edinburgh, their merchandise, sales of merch, and they do like badges and CDs and T-shirts... That covers their flyers, their accommodation. Like, they live off their merch and it's road money. So I don't... This is so crass. I'm just talking about business. This is bad.
No.
Okay. So anyway, I kind of wanted to have something to show for those shows, because you kind of tour a show for sort of like a year and a half and then it just goes away and all you have are the flyers you forgot to hand out in the boot of your car.
So many flyers. So sorry, everyone always gets them.
Sorry, Amazon.
So many done. I've got like dedications flyers every bloody where.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm thinking of getting my flyer just put on a stamp and I'll just stamp people when they come near me and then sucked into them. It's on them. They can't put it. This is an awful idea. Cancel the stamps. Cancel the stamp. What are we talking about? Oh, the recording. Yeah, so I'm getting it mixed and mastered at the moment, so hopefully I'll have it all kind of sorted to sell by, I don't know, Christmas? That would be smart business, wouldn't it?
Will you release it like... Digitally, is that the right word?
Yeah, I would say I would release it digitally.
Yeah.
The music of the future.
So we will keep you updated on that. Like, right. The team, we will like plug that shit for you. hey, let's talk about Jerry's Girls. So you're a late addition to the cast.
Well, I'm not really in the cast.
No, but I think you are. Like,
well, I don't know yet.
Well, I have an inkling that... Do you like how I'm not directing it? Or am I involved? But you've joined the company of Jerry's Girls, which is the, for people that don't know, the production company here in Melbourne are doing a production of Jerry's Girls with all of these incredible leading ladies of Australian music theatre. And you and Brent Hill, both beautiful leading ladies.
Yeah.
What's your role in Jerry's Girls?
Well, I don't, to be honest, I don't know yet, because this is all, you know, only happened really last week that it kind of came through. But they, Maddie Frank, who's music directing it, called me up and he was like, we need someone to play on the show. as you know, as the accompanist, which I also do for a job. That's how I make money. And so, and my, you know, extensive cabaret career, which is very lucrative.
I like to call it, Rob Mills calls it no pay cabaret, and I've just, I've stolen it. I've launched it.
It's excellent. No pay cabaret, hashtag. Yeah, Maddie Frank called me and asked me to be the accompanist, but because Dean Bryan is, because Jerry's Girls isn't a book musical, so Dean's kind of rewriting it so that it's sort of set between the rehearsal room and the onstage numbers. So the women are sort of playing themselves, if not versions of themselves, and Brent Hill is playing the director. So it means that in a job where I would ordinarily have a great time in the rehearsal room and play with the band, I get to be an onstage kind of accompanist in the rehearsal room. So I don't know. I told Maddie I could do it, and he was like, great, Dean will start writing you in.
I just have this vision of you sitting at the piano, like, you know, during the show with, like, a cigarette and a cup of, like, cold instant coffee being like, take it from the top.
That is how I work when I'm coming. People are like, there's no smoking in here. And you don't smoke. And I'm like, get out of my way.
No, well, I think it's exciting. And I think that I can't wait to see the show. I think it's going to be, it's a stellar lineup.
I am so excited. Plus, I get to hang out with, like, Virginia Gay and Josie Lane and Brent Hill for, like, a month. And I love those guys.
And, like, and, well, I did this concert a few weeks ago where Sylvie Palladino sang at it. And I just, like, what the hell? Actually, when she sings.
And Nancy Hayes and Rhonda Birchmore and Deb Kreiser and just so many excellent humans.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. Hey, Gillian Cosgrove, you went to Whopper.
I did.
Well, not all those years ago, like some years ago, but not like back in the 90s. and you'd studied music theatre. But like, tell us a little bit about before that. Like, what was little Jill like? How did you kind of... How did you, you know, find ye old, you know, piano?
Le musicale?
Yeah, le musicale and the piano.
I don't know, when I was really little, we had a piano in our house. Yeah. And so I just kind of bash around on it. And then when I was 5, I was allowed to start ballet lessons and piano lessons, which was very, very exciting to me. And then I just kind of kept acting lessons. I don't know how my parents afforded our child. Like, there's 5 kids in my family. So I was doing, by the time I finished year 12, I was doing, like, ballet, tap, jazz, contemporary, and piano and flute and trombone, although that was free because the school needed a trombone player, so I got free lessons.
No one wants to play the trombone.
Yeah. I had so many boyfriends. I had no boyfriends. I started doing school musicals, and I had this amazing music teacher who's the head of the conservatorium in Queensland now, which is crazy. Not crazy. He's great. but I had this great music teacher who was very encouraging, and he was just, his name's Scott Harrison, and he was just, yeah, he was great. So I kind of had my first accompanist work too after I finished year 12. He got me back to play for the school musical, which paid for my car. Thanks, high school. It was the worst car ever. Anyway, it's kind of what I always wanted to do, and so I auditioned for Whopper straight out of school when I was 16, which I wish there was video footage of, because I had this singing teacher that decided I was a soprano, and she gave me Unusual Way from 9, which I think as a 16-year-old I was fully able to emotionally understand. And There's Got to Be Something Better Than This from Sweet Charity, which is usually a trio, and she found it in this weird soprano key. So my first Whopper audition is literally me going, there's got to be something better than this. There's got to be something. It was awful. It was so awful. And then I hung out in Brisbane for a few years. I did like a year and a half of a drama secondary ed degree, which I hated. And I did a lot of amateur musicals in Brisbane. If we have time, I will tell you hilarious amateur musical theatre stories, which were great. And then I kind of went overseas for a bit. And then by the time I came back, I was like, okay, I want to go to Whopper now. And I auditioned again, but in that time between my first and my second, because I work as an accompanist, I'd played for so many other auditions for Whopper. I played for heaps of them, mostly for people that didn't get in. So by the time I auditioned the second time, I was like, I've been knocked back so many times, but I really hadn't. I had just been there when that had happened.
You'd just been in the room.
I just really took on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I got in, which is great, because I don't know what I would have done if I didn't.
Yeah.
And then I moved to Perth and I had my, you know, my 21st birthday at the end of my first week at O Week, which is sort of a big exciting.
So you had your 21st birthday at the end of O Week, which means that you had porn party.
The day before.
Ah.
It was on Valentine's Day.
Oh, so much porn. WAPA does this thing where, like, at the end, at the beginning of each year, there's porn party where you go dressed as a porn, or just porny, like not a porn star. You go dressed
you have to
porny.
Wear less clothes, I
think. My first year, 1999, I walked over two people having sex on the stairs.
Oh no!
Yeah, at porn party.
Well, our second year porn party is the porn party that ruined a lot of things because a bunch of scoundrels, hooligans, non-performing folk, kind of came to the house where it was. Admittedly, we should not have had it in Maylands. And then, like, we ended up having to, like, barricade inside the house and people threw bricks through the windows and Drew Weston got a black eye and then he had to have his headshot taken the next day. It was, he looked very dangerous, though. I will say that. Yeah, that was kind of
crazy. Crazy, crazy times. Hey, look, that's the hard stuff done. We're going to just do the ticket A42. Test.
Okay, I'm so nervous.
Don't be nervous.
I feel like I should have studied.
No, it's fun. It's just a series of questions. And you get 100% because there's no wrong answers.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first question is called The Kid in A42. So it just kind of references the name of the show. Like, I knew very, very distinctly when I was going to be in the musicals. Did you know? Did you have a moment where you were like watched something or, you know, or an experience where you're like, I want to be a performer?
I don't know if I had just one. Like, when I was little, there were, like, three movies that I watched on repeat all the time, and they were The Sound of Music, The King and I, and Oliver.
Sure.
So, Nazi Germany, just, like, The Fall of Siam, yeah, and, you know, just London. The workhouses of the office. Like, what stuff for a child to be watching on repeat? So I watched that all the time and my parents would always go to musicals and they'd bring home the program for me to read and that was always very exciting.
Did they not take you?
Well, no, because they were like going to Phantom of the Opera and they had five kids. They had five kids, guys. They couldn't. They just wanted to get out and see some Andrew Lloyd Webber, you know, as a sweet release.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I have a specific one.
That's okay.
Yeah.
No wrong answers. Okay. Gillian Cosgrove, what has got your goat? Like, what gives you the shits, if you can think of one?
Oh, I'm getting angry about so many things.
I don't think you do. Like, you're so easygoing.
Really?
Yeah, I think you are.
Oh, I feel like I'm the worst. That's really nice. What do I get angry about? I worked in hospitality for a very, very long time. So I get mad about things like people saying they need to eat gluten-free and I'm like, okay, are you a celiac? No, you're not. So I understand that wheat makes you feel farty and bloated, but also this is what's available.
Yeah.
I just get angry about things like that. I get angry about people not... I get angry about manspreading on trams. I get so mad about it.
Okay.
There are two chairs here. Put your legs together. It makes me so mad.
I don't think I'm manspread and I'm a man, in case anyone didn't know.
Just to clarify.
I don't understand. Like, I know there's bits there, like, you know, and I don't claim to be...
I mean, it's not exclusively... I mean, there's... I just get mad when people, like, sit in the aisle seat and don't move over. Yeah. Or just people not moving down.
Sure.
And, you know, I get mad about, like, big things like racism and climate change. Now government!
Yeah.
I get really mad about that.
Yeah. This is called very superstitious. So theatre-y, artistic-y people, not even artistic-y, just artistic people,
yeah, get, real
yeah, that'll be the next show, get a bit superstitious sometimes. So do you have any, as someone that kind of, you know, you do one-woman shows all over the place in all different venues, is there something that you do before each show that's kind of superstitious or are you just relaxed about that stuff?
I will develop a different routine for each venue, for each run. Generally for Comedy Festival, because that's a month-long run where I just abandon my life and all my sense. I always eat the same pre-show dinner, which is a Barocca and a tin of Pringles. Sometimes there's vodka in the Barocca. depends how rough a night it is.
Yeah.
Usually my pre-show ritual is either like every night before the show I will have a Barocca, or in some places I'll have a peppermint tea, or in Perth I had a coffee because it was so hot and I just needed to wake up.
Yeah.
But I'm otherwise I'm not kind of
that kind.
Nah, not so much. Because I tour with festivals, so everything, the environment is so different every time that I just sort of make a ritual for that season, I guess.
Sure. Tell me the five things you can't live without.
My family. That's so lame, but that's actually true. I'm obsessed with my family. I love them. Oh, they're so great. Tea. My piano. My laptop. And I'm going to include my boyfriend in my family because it's bad if I don't say that. Oh, what else? What else do I love more than anything? Pastries? Maybe pastries. Maybe Pringles. It's a tie.
Awesome. Pastries and Pringles. One of the top five.
It's like in the food pyramid. They're like the bottom one.
Yeah.
You're meant to eat a lot of that, I think.
Did you go to the Beechworth Bakery here in Ballarat yet?
No, should I?
Yes. So Luke Hunter and I went to the Beechworth Bakery for lunch today because we were running late for our tech rehearsal.
Okay.
And I had the best chicken and vegetable pie I might have ever had. It's quite famous here in Ballarat.
Vanilla slice?
No, but Luke had a custard tart.
Close. We, good people of the internet, John O'Hara and I, went to the Eat-In Pizza Hut in Ballarat.
We did.
It was the best. It was like eating my childhood.
I felt kind of sick for the gala though.
I didn't. I just felt happy and like I should have had more ice cream.
Have you ever thrown a diva tanty? Or what is the biggest diva tanty? If you haven't thrown one, what's the biggest diva tanty that you've seen thrown?
Oh, that's a hard one. Really, the only time I've seen like proper ones thrown is in amateur theatre.
Sure.
I don't think I've... I mean, there's some divery people. I host Broadway Unplugged, which means Broadway Unplugged is a night in Melbourne and in Sydney too, where there's different guests on every month. So that's always very interesting to me to see people that are performing in musicals and to see who's at kind of what level of... You know, a lot of people are... it's a very casual, fun night.
Yeah.
But some people will come in and go, where am I standing? Where's my microphone? And other people get the vibe straight away.
Yeah.
That's always interesting. But really, only in amateur musical theatre have I seen, like, people yell about things. People just... in a production of Kiss Me, Kate, Al Petruccio just, like, correct the shits. And he just, like... it was amazing. Just things like that. Yeah. Where,
well, that's what I mean. I think they're always so funny in retrospect.
Of course. Yeah. I don't think I've ever really thrown a divery thing. Maybe because I'm often so disorganized that no one is less organized than me. I can't be disappointed.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, sorry. Hey, guys, sorry. I'm so sorry for everything all the time.
This is phone a friend.
Yep.
So who's your one-stop shop when you need to, you know, share some great news, bad news, need help?
Oh, this is sad because it's used to be, well, I mean, it still is. It's my sister, but she just moved to Canada, so she's just really far away.
Yeah.
My best friend lives in New York. Sometimes it's him. He's very good at, like, he's very rational and sensible and smart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably those two.
Sure. Have you ever had a show crush? You know how, like, when you work on a show, you always get a little showmance or a show crush? So tell me about... you know, tell me about your last showbiz show crush. I think I know.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh,
did you ever show crush on Nelson Gardner?
I think I did. Oh, no. Your microphone fell into my lap.
That's okay.
I'm on a line. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it. I guess I did have a little bit of a show. Nelson Gardner played my husband in Company. And, yeah, we are just exactly the same kind of stupid. So we had a really fun time together. Yeah, probably had a bit of a show crush on you, John O'Hara. Because we had a super fun time. You indulged me. You played my stupid pre-show games that I really enjoy.
Jill plays pre-show games. My favourite is called 8 Counts. And basically she gives you 8 counts and then you have to act it out on the spot. It's like improv games. So yes. Jill, for our listeners, just do an 8 count. So I can't act it out because I can't see. But like 8 counts would be maybe something like this.
Okay, I should also add that this is credited mostly to Josie Lane and also Sage Douglas as a proponent of 8 counts. So 8 counts began as being actual dance counts. So it used to be like walk, walk, look, kick, step together, turn. But it became more abstract so that it would include things like, okay, these are your 8 counts. step, step, hip, hip, hip. Hey, guys, get on the floor.
So you have to act that out, like you only get it like two, maybe three times max.
If you do those eight counts, please make a video and send it to Aussie Theatre.
Yes, we want to see that. Yes,
interactive segment.
Yes, that's exciting. All right, genie in a bottle grants you three wishes.
Yes.
What are they?
I've been preparing for this my whole life. Number one, wish for more wishes. Always number one. Once you have that, you're pretty much sorted. Like, that's your go-to. I know that people would say this, but also I feel like peace in the Middle East. Yeah. Why not, you know? Like, I just feel like that's something we should all have on our list.
Yeah.
Maybe world peace. Maybe end poverty. Maybe all those things. But also, what about a tin of Pringles that doesn't run out? Yeah. Also could be on the list.
Sure.
I read this really great thing that I liked one day where somebody, this must have been a tweet or something, where someone was sassing someone and they were like, "Ugh, nice scrunchie, the 90s called, it wants your scrunchie back." And they were like, "The 90s called, did you warn them about September 11?
Whoa.
Just like the idea of shutting down someone who's trying to sass you.
Yeah.
By making them feel bad.
Okay, this is called Switcheroo. You can ask me a question. And I'll answer anything. I do answer anything.
I already know a lot of very funny things about you. What would I like to know about you, John O'Hara? Oh, I would like to know, I meant to ask you this, the significance of your tattoo.
Ah, cool. That's a good question.
Thank you.
I have a tattoo on my left kind of, is that called a clavicle? No,
yeah,
collarbone.
It's a bit lower. It's just under your clavicle.
Under my clav.
And it's a tattoo of Paddy LuPone.
It's a tattoo of three birds. Two of them are sitting on a little thing and one's flying away.
Yep. Yeah.
So the significance of that is that I'd always wanted a tattoo and I decided it was 2013 when I went to New Zealand with the musical Wicked. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I've not. No, what is it about?
So much happened before Dorothy dropped in. I'll just say that. and I was like, I'm going to get the tattoo in New Zealand on Wicked and I want something to kind of represent home because I'm from Perth. Mm-hmm. Because what I've kind of realised as I've gotten older is that I live in Melbourne and my life is in Melbourne, but home is Perth and it's always going to be Perth because that's where my family is. Yeah. And that it's fine. Like, I can fly away and I can come back. Like, it's okay to come back. Because for a long time, I kind of thought if I came back, it would mean that I failed.
Yeah.
I'd let go of that. So I went to this guy I went to a few tattooists in New Zealand. I found this guy, did my research, and I kind of said, this is kind of what I want it to represent, and I like birds. And he and I kind of came up with that together. And so the one flying away is kind of me, I guess.
That's really nice. I like that. Graduated from Whopper, especially when I left Perth. I get really sad about endings of things. Yeah. Like, always at the end of a show, I'm always crying in the final bow because I'm the worst.
Yeah.
And I got really sad, especially because I was like, I don't have a home anymore.
Yeah.
Like, my parents are in Brisbane, but I'm not, like, I never really felt like I was from there, and most of my friends weren't there anymore. And now my parents are in Melbourne, and they just moved to the beach, and my siblings are on other sides of the world. And I got really sad, but I really like where I live now, and yeah, that's a really nice idea. You really do have to surrender the idea of home sometimes if you're a performer.
Yeah.
I think. If your parents don't live in the house that you grew up in.
Yeah. You kind Mine of do still.
That's amazing.
Yeah, or my mum does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. That was a good one. Hey, what's a secret skill that you have that no one knows about?
Some people know this. I can carry 10 champagne glasses in one hand.
Full?
Empty glasses. I feel like I should always preface it with that because now you're less impressed, aren't you?
No, I'm not less impressed.
I can do that. My knees go backwards.
Like hyperextend?
Yeah. Do you want to see how? Have you seen how much? Mm-mm. Have I showed you this?
No, but like.
Look, I can stand in second with my knees together.
Whoa. It's like you're in Black Swan. It's like you know when her legs go weird in that dream?
Yep. Yeah. I am a Black Swan dream. That is my straight name.
I love that. So many people have trouble with that question. You're like, okay, this is what I can do.
So I remember going on a I went on a Contiki tour when I was 19, as you do.
Yeah.
And they were like, everyone's going to go around and say their name and where they're from and an interesting fact about themselves. And I got so panicked that I didn't have one that I was like, for the rest of your life, always know your interesting fact. Always be prepared.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay, so this is called This or That.
Yep.
It's just a few questions, quick fire. Tell me.
Love it.
This or That.
Yes.
Sweet or savory?
Oh, slavery. I'm so indecisive.
Dog or cat?
Neither.
Tea or coffee?
Tea.
Mum or dad?
Both. That's a horrible question. Do you really ask people that? Do people yes. answer?
Yes.
Oh, people are the worst.
Black or white?
Black.
In or out?
In.
Walk or run?
Promenade.
Summer or winter?
Summer, always.
Sydney or Melbourne?
Melbourne.
Beer or wine?
Wine.
Under or over?
Under?
Yeah, weird. Chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Salt or pepper?
Salt.
Boxes or briefs?
Oh, I thought you were saying boxes like packing boxes. Not bothered. Okay.
Christmas or birthdays?
Christmas.
Kisses or hugs?
Kisses.
Hot or cold?
Hot.
Boy or girl?
Boy.
Mates or dates?
Mates.
Day or night?
Night.
His or hers?
Ours.
Me or you?
Us.
Yes, so you're impressive. Good. You're very, very good. Hey, look.
That's fun. Did you come up with that? That's
I wrote that.
Check you out, Jonathan.
So this is a bit of a shameless plug moment. So let's just plug Jerry's Girls that you're doing. It's going to be playing November 21 to December 6 at the Playhouse at the Arts Centre.
I'm so impressed with you.
I do my homework. Tickets are available through artscentremelbourne.com.au.
Yeah, great.
You'll keep us updated on your album?
I will. As soon as if it's good to go by the time you release this, bam.
And do you have any confirmed, festival dates coming up?
No, I don't have anything that I'm allowed to definitely say, but it's possible.
Sure.
I will be in Perth, and it's possible I will do the Comedy Festival.
Everything is possible.
Available options.
Hey, also, I'm working on the Rob Guest Endowment concert this year, and you can come and see us in Sydney. I'm not performing because I'm way too old to to be awarded
you're
the Rob Guest
Endowment. Too well endowed.
I'm too well endowed.
You need an extra endowment.
Yes. But that's on November 9 at the Lyric Theatre in Sydney on the stage of the Matilda set. And we've got some awesome performances other than
do
the finals.
Get a go on the swings? Because that seems
no, you have no idea how strict they are with the floor and the all of that. Yeah, and the
what's
swings.
What's the point of doing the podcast and down if you don't get to go on the Matilda swings?
Oh, nah. But the cast of Matilda look like they might be performing.
Great.
Can't promise anything. But hey, speaking of keeping you updated with Jill's details of albums and festival dates, she's on the Twitter and she's on the Instagram, and her details are
I'm on twitter.com/JillianCosgrove, facebook.com/JillianCosgrove, and on Instagram @JillianCosgrove. Jillian with a G, Cosgrove with a cos like a lettuce.
See, that's why you can use your name, because it's not common like mine, John O'Hara. There's a million of us, so
yeah.
I have to
but
be...
also, no one ever reads your name and goes, Gon O'Hara? I assume that's never happened to
me. No, that has never happened to me. I'm on Twitter and Instagram, John James O'Hara. And
if you have a show, you could call it John with the Wind.
John?
No, that sounds awful. I thought about it. Don't do that.
Yeah, I won't call it that.
I was thinking about Scarlet O'Hara and Gone with the Wind. I've had
Sure. Hey, we're going to take a quick selfie. That's happening right now. And hey, Jill, thanks for coming on Ticket A42.
Thanks for having me in your beautiful hotel room in Ballarat. It's a treat.
In Ballarat, yeah. It's the first, maybe the last interview I conduct in Ballarat.
Don't say that. Maybe you'll come back here for the bakery or the Eden Pizza Hut.
Beechworth Bakery. You could come back for lunch. At the Beechworth, and then...
This podcast is actually sponsored by the Beechworth Bakery.
Let's go to the piano bar.
Okay, great.
Okay, see you.
Bye.
This podcast was produced by Matt Edwards for AussieTheatre.com.